Be good.
Hello, friends. Hello, strangers. Welcome to the Monkey Tooth Podcast. This is Andrew. My wife, Tiffany, and our little dog, Paley, are out for a walk at the moment. And I'm recording this episode, the intro, to this episode in a parking lot out in front of a very beautiful library. And we're getting it done a little bit early because we're probably going to be out in the woods and in the middle of nowhere for a little while. So I need to get all this up and ready to go for our friends and listeners out there in the world. And I would just want to get right into telling you about today's guest. I like everybody that we've met on this trip, and particularly all the people we've had on the show, but this guy in particular was something special. His name is Ricardo Serpa. Now, you're going to hear all about Ricardo and what he does on the episode, but we met him in Chicken, Alaska on our way out of the state and into Canada, and immediately I knew I wanted to get this guy on the show and share him with you. He rode his motorbike from Miami to Alaska. He's done that multiple times. He's an amazing photographer whose work you can check out at ricardoserpa.com. His last name is S-E-R-P-A, R-I-C-A-R-D-O, serpa.com. I'll put a link as well in on our website to his amazing site. He's one of those people that has an idea and follows through with it and makes it happen and makes it special and beautiful and cool. And so we're very, very fortunate to have had the time to sit with him and connect. And I think you'll like it. At least I hope you will. I can't see why you wouldn't. Tell your friends. Okay, a couple other things. We are going to start reading the journal that I write on the podcast in between episodes with guests. So if you do not give a shit about what we're doing or where we're going, I don't blame you. But those will be in between guests. So I don't know how often I'm going to do them, how often I'll be reading them, but enough people have said that that would be convenient for them. They would rather hear it than read it. So that'll be coming up soon. I don't know if I'm going to go back into the old ones or just read the next one. We'll figure it out. But keep an eye out for journals. And I guess I'll label them differently. So if they show up in iTunes or Stitcher, you'll know what it is. I want to thank all of our new patrons on Patreon. It's hugely, hugely helpful. You people out there who are supporting, some of you for 25 cents an episode, which is fantastic. Some of you are doing $5 a month. Incredible. There are people giving even more, which is mind-blowing to me. And it really does help. Thank you so much. If you're interested in joining those wonderful people, you can do that at patreon.com/monkeytooth. And there's also a link on our website, mtp.dog. There's links there to all sorts of good stuff. And if you've not left us a review on Stitcher or iTunes, please do so. It's great for everybody involved if you can do that. And that's it. We've got some good episodes coming up. I really hope you enjoy those when they show up. But this one, I don't know. I'm proud of it. I really enjoyed doing it, and I hope you enjoy it as well. And I hope you're out there doing fun and interesting things yourself. And if there's something you want to tell me about, send me a note, mtp.dog/contact, and let us know what you're up to. Okay, have fun, take care, enjoy this episode with Ricardo Serpa. Until next time, bye-bye.
Okay, well, my name is Ricardo. I live in Florida, North Miami Beach. I'm 57, and I've been a professional photographer for over 30 years now. Yeah, about 30 years. And what I do now at this stage of my life, of my photography career, I travel. I travel with a motorcycle. trying to go to remote places and very far away places or places where people don't usually go for a very single reason. Nowadays, everyone is a photographer. It's a difficult thing to be a photographer. It used to be that you needed some skills and you needed a set of knowledge that now the phones just destroyed. Or, I wouldn't say destroyed, it just made photography more accessible. On the other hand, for professional photographers, people who make a living out of this, it made life much more difficult.
Yes.
So 5 years ago, I found out that it would be a great idea to combine passions at this point in my life. I love meeting people, I love traveling, I love motorcycles, and of course I love photography, besides writing. So if I can travel, I can put all these passions in motion.
Yeah. And you picked a motorcycle.
I picked a motorcycle, yeah. Basically because I always had fun with motorcycles.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I'm not a motorcycle freak. I mean, I know about motorcycles because I have to. I don't know how to fix them.
Hmm.
I don't know how to change a tire.
Yeah.
I know how to ride them. So I guess it's a genuine passion.
Yeah.
Exactly, because I don't know how to do much with it, except riding.
But enjoy it. You know how to enjoy it quite well. And the thing that I think would certainly set your photography apart is that you can get to places on a motorcycle that you cannot get to in a vehicle like this.
Exactly.
I mean, a whole other portion of the world is open to you in a way that's not open to others. So
yes,
that's a pretty good
choice. It's pretty good. And actually, I don't want to sound corny, but when you are riding, you have the ground, the road is like 12-15 inches right, yeah, under your foot, and you can smell things and you can see things, and especially you can go off roads and just go places
anywhere.
yeah
So you started your journey, this particular trip that you're on right now, when did you leave Florida?
I left Florida early June, first week of June, yes. And I went straight to Seattle. I had two presentations there near Seattle, about 100 miles east. It was a motorcycle rally by a big company called Touratech. They do motorcycle parts and gear for long distance traveling.
Yeah.
Became quite a big company. And every year they have a rally. 1,000 guys show up, camp for 4 days and go out riding.
Yeah.
And listen to presentations. So I was called to do two presentations, one about photography and motorcycles, and the other about my trips from Florida to Alaska and back.
Yeah.
So I did that, 10 days, Florida to Seattle, and then I had enough time to kill. I thought I would come to Alaska.
Yeah.
But I spent close to a month riding Washington, Oregon, and California, and Nevada.
Yeah.
I have a wife whom I love very much, so she doesn't ride. Mm. And one of the secrets of these long trips is to be able to insert her in the trip somehow.
Yes.
Which can be tricky because she doesn't ride. Oh. So this year I parked my bike in Vegas for 2 weeks. She flew in, we rented a Jeep. And we spent 2 weeks in Utah, Colorado, and Arizona, Grand Canyon, Bryce, Zion,
yeah,
Moab, just taking photos and enjoying the time together.
That's great.
And then July 24th, she left. It was 110 degrees in Vegas. God. I had to pick up my bike, be alone, and drive up north. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
I came all the way to Alaska. That's my fourth time coming here on a bike.
Yeah.
And arrived here 9 days ago. And this year, Alaska didn't didn't receive me with open arms.
Yeah, received you with rain.
With rain and colds. but by now I have really good friends around.
Yeah.
And it was all about visiting these friends. So.
Yeah. You've made the best of a good, of a not terrible situation.
Exactly.
You made the best of a good situation, I think.
Yeah. I cannot say it's a bad situation.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Even the worst day on the road, raining and hail and whatever, beats a day in a cubicle. Every day I get you magic ball to get on the bus that takes me to you.
We have a very similar take on work, and we talked about the difference between work and passion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you had a very different work life than you currently do. You've not always been a photographer.
No,
you came to it in a way that I thought was really special. You talked about your father. Do you mind telling that again?
No, of
sorry
course
to ask
not.
You to do it again.
No, of course not. What I was telling over dinner. Is basically the what I think is the foundation of everything I do in life today. I think I can backtrack and know exactly that moment in my life when I started having a different perspective that led me to where I am today. I didn't build it overnight. It took me a few decades to get there. But when I was 22 years old, I lost my father. He was 47 years old. And just before he left, 1 month before, we had a dinner together at home. And he made me a series of very interesting questions over three bottles of wine. He was 47, I'm 22, and he asks me if I'm happy. And I say, I'm happy, of course I'm happy, just like you are. And he goes, I'm not asking about this type of happy. I'm talking about something deeper. And I was a little surprised and I said to him, I don't know. That kind of happiness, I don't know. And he goes, then you better start asking. Because I'm 47 and I realize I'm not, which came as a shock. He was this amazing guy, funny guy, and very smart. And I asked him why, and he told me, well, I always did what the two important women in my life told me to do. My mother and your mother. And I'm 47 now, and I decided it's time for me to do what I want to do. And he wanted to open a restaurant. He had a business, and so I was impressed. And I wish I had more time to ask him about the reasons, but the only thing he was able to tell me is this. I decided I'm not working for money anymore. I'm working for passion. And at this moment in my life, that's what I need to do. I don't care much for money. I have what I need. And I believe if you work on something that you like, you will be probably good at it. And therefore, some money will come also.
Yeah.
And 1 month later, he wasn't there anymore. And that served me as a red flag, as a gift, as you name it.
Yeah.
And this is it. 30 years later, yeah. I'm trying to combine my passions.
Yes, yes. That's a powerful, powerful gift.
It was.
To have any sort of message left behind, you know, and that he gave it to you in such a powerful way.
Yes.
Where he was admitting something. You don't expect your father to admit anything to you. You know, I only saw my father cry three times. And it was when his parents died and his dog died. Other than that, like, he never admitted anything. There was no chink in the armor. You know, he was very...
Imagine Jesus, Andrew, in Brazil with the macho culture. You don't cry.
Yeah.
Men don't cry. But my father was man enough to cry and to let me know about his feelings.
Yeah.
Not always.
Sure.
But when took him really three counted. Bottles of a nice Portuguese rosé wine. But
hey, that's a good recipe for a lot of things, man. Never mind.
Yes.
But that's do you feel, sorry to jump way into the future, but do you feel like you have that sort of relationship with your family? You seem like a very open sort of guy.
Oh yeah. I have four kids, two mm-hmm. girls and two boys. And I always try to be absolutely honest with them, mm-hmm. absolutely transparent. And basically that same message that my father gave me, I already passed to them.
Yeah.
And which is funny because one of my kids, my daughter, my third kid, graduated at Northwestern and is working at Morgan Stanley at 24 years old.
Wow.
She heard the part of money, but she said, I better make some money now. I'm just kidding. She likes what she does and she's good at it. And she's just at these moments of her life where.
Sure. And you took a similar path. You didn't immediately jump ship what you were doing at 22. And
I stayed in the corporate world. Yeah. I was an export manager for a tobacco company, traveling the whole world, and I did it for 6 years more after my father passed. And by 28, I had a close call, meaning I almost died in a car accident, and I was fortunate enough to have enough time during the accident to realize what was going on, that I was dying at 28. And I wasn't scared, but I was really, really upset that I was going to die just like my father, doing something, selling cigarettes.
Yeah.
At that moment, you are not the export manager. You are just a cigarette salesman.
Yeah.
You squeeze it, and that's what it is. So I decided right there that it was time to change gears.
Yeah.
Quit my job and became a photographer, a full-time photojournalist. I was very lucky, but as they say, luck only happens if you position yourself to be exposed to it.
Yes.
If you are afraid of the world, if you think everything will be wrong, will go wrong, luck will never knock on your door because it's knocking and you are not hearing.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah.
Right? So
And you have a new set of ears when you suddenly feel you're dying and your main expression is that of regret.
Yes.
And not of anything else. It seems like you told me, do you mind telling me the story? Because you said you flipped in a car.
Yes. The I can tell.
Yeah, please tell that.
Oh, basically, I was in Paraguay. Next to Brazil, I was actually in a region between Paraguay, Argentina, and Brazil. Mm-hmm. And I was there for 1 week, launching a new brand of cigarettes in Paraguay, traveling. I had visited many, many times the past several months. And that was supposed to be my last visit before the actual launch of the new brand. And I'm doing samples in the little villages and tests. And I had my camera on my lap. That's my passion, right? So, and I had a driver on a Toyota Hilux. And suddenly, between one village to the other, raining, I stopped by the side of the road to take a photo of two boys. He kept going. And not 3 minutes later, he lost control and the car flipped. He went off the road and hit the shoulder and started flipping, rolling. And I'm there thinking I'm dying. And at the end of the, when it stopped, I was okay. But I was totally conscious that what I just said, I wasn't scared. I was really, really upset. And that thought changed everything.
Yeah.
So 2 days later, I went back to Rio and I quit my job, basically quit my job. People thought I was traumatized. I lost a nut in the accident. But it was the best decision I've ever made my whole life.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that life was easy, of course.
Yeah.
But it was the best. It was something I'm very, very proud of. I don't even like to say I'm proud of because I think pride is a little...
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
But that I'm proud of.
Yes, as you should be. You took a 15 times
less
reduction. Yeah.
My salary, I got lucky. I told you over dinner. 3 months later, I met the right people by chance. And they were all photojournalists, very established ones. And they appreciated the fact that I quit everything to do that.
Yeah.
Actually, they basically told me, what makes this very special, is it okay?
No, you're fine. Sorry.
What made it very special is the fact that I made my mind. I did the move.
Mm-hmm.
I was not thinking of quitting my job and becoming a photographer and talking to photographers. And I believe in life you have to have these... milestones, and they better be a little radical. I will explain you why. I don't believe it's very hard to explain this just talking, but imagine that you are in a situation where you want to go to a boat that is by a dock. Your life is on the dock. It's very comfortable. Your comfort zone is on the dock, but you want to go on the boat because that boat may take you to your desired place, to your passion. You just don't know whether the boat will ever leave, right? And in that moment, I came to the conclusion that most people have one of these three approaches. I want to go on the boat, but life here is comfortable. I will be very close to the boat. When this thing is about to leave, I will jump and go. It never happens. By the moment the boat leaves, you are distracted with something else. And the boat will go. Second approach. I will put one foot on the boat, one foot on the dock. So as soon as I sense the boat is about to leave, I will jump. And to make that analogy perfect, the boat is always going... You know, you never know the tide. You never know if it's leaving.
Right.
But I know one thing. If you use this strategy for your passion, you will fail miserably because, let's say, you are not the same guy on the dock anymore. You don't have 2 feet there. You just have one.
Hmm.
It's lacking something. Whatever you were doing before, you are not doing it as good as you were, as well as you were. And on the boat, you were also never there.
Right. You're in neither place.
So if you want to be a photographer and you want to work weekends as a photographer, Monday to Friday, the people at work will start feeling, this guy's not here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And during the weekend, when you were doing your warrior time as a photographer, you don't have enough time to really gain knowledge and be good at it or excel at it. So I'm a firm believer that not always, but sometimes jump in it and just see what happens.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, crawl back.
Swim, learn to swim.
Swim, it doesn't matter. The set of skills that you gain, all the sets of skills, they are still there. So go back to it. You can make it if you try.
It seems to me like you really listen to your intuition. Now, you listen to yourself. You did that with your father, did that with your work. And you, in the story you told us about your wife, the woman who's now your wife,
yes.
You listened to yourself, your own intuition, instead of looking for guidance necessarily elsewhere or for some other sign. You said, well, here's what I feel like is going to happen. I'll trust that and I'll do that.
That's exactly right.
That seems like, is that an approach you just always take in your life? You just listen to your gut?
Which can be, I realize that, it can be a dangerous approach because maybe sometimes you think, well, I'm sure I don't know it all. Sometimes I listen to people who they know better about something. But ultimately, I'm going always with my intuition.
Yeah.
But in a very humble way, Andrew. Not, again, my truths are my truths.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think about stepping in other people's lives and telling what to do.
Right.
Every now and then, someone hears my story and go, "Should I quit my job?" And I have no clue.
No idea. Yeah.
If you were asking me, probably not. That's the only.
Yeah.
Probably should think more about it.
Yeah.
Think it through and don't ask strangers if you should quit your job.
Yes.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
But it's also a good start that you were thinking about it. Mm-hmm. It's so work on it.
Right.
And see what worked for me, not necessarily will work for you.
Yeah. Listen to yourself,
yes.
I think is the best.
And I did this my whole life. And
yeah.
Again, I believe that it's a cliche too, but I don't want to grow old and collect regrets, mm-hmm. you know? I have already a few. I think we all do.
Yeah.
I know people who say, well, I have no regrets in life. You should regret having said that. Because that's to start with. Of
right.
course you do.
Yeah, of course you do.
But they are not major regrets.
Yeah.
That's put it this way.
That's the best you can hope for is to mitigate and minimize the amount of regret you pile up.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that you were shown one, what was it? Mark Twain was talking about he saw an obituary for himself, and he said the reports of my death have been over exaggerated.
Yeah.
actually, the Nobel Prize that came about from an obituary being printed about the wrong Nobel brother. One of the brothers, or several Nobel brothers,
uh-huh.
and they were arms manufacturers. They made, I think, dynamite and these crazy weapons.
I didn't know that,
yeah.
Really?
Yes, and one of them died. Okay, so the one that was living had an obituary written about him, and when he read it, it was focused very heavily on his contribution to the dismemberment and death and destruction and having been an arms manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
And he was so taken with the idea of his name forever being synonymous with death and destruction and war that he came up with a Nobel Peace Prize to then tie
never,
his name.
Yeah, never thought about reading the...
yeah, who is Nobel, right? So that, but sorry, the point of that long, goofy story was that regret can really push you in a way that's meaningful long after you're gone. And that you have taken this approach from that moment with your father and in that moment in a near-death situation. Instead of thinking about anything else, you were filled with that regret. And it's almost like you got to read your own obituary. You know,
yes, in a way it is. You're totally right.
And
that's a good insight.
And you've passed that along. Like you've made that point to your children. You're making it right now to however many people end up listening to this show. And I think that's a pretty... I don't know. It's a nice gift that keeps on giving in a beautiful and meaningful way.
And what I try to do now, you are absolutely right, Andrew. And what I try to do with my trips now, first and foremost, it's a very selfish thing because I want to take photos. I say selfish because it's in my own benefits.
Yeah.
Right.
You're talking to two people who've quit their jobs, have no children, and just travel for 2 years. So
you know exactly what I mean.
You're in good company with selfish, no problem.
But also, In a way, and please don't get me wrong, I'm not wearing the costume of the good guy who is trying to impact the world. I'm not. But I know that almost every day when I am on the road, I'm leaving something that I hope it's good for people. It doesn't happen every day, actually, but every now and then it happens, and it's so rewarding. It's when you meet people who sees the plates and goes, "Are you from Florida?" And I say, "Yes, I am." But you are not from Florida with that accent.
Well, you could and be. You might be Cuban. Everybody could.
Yeah. Well, the best one was the guy here, actually here in Canada, who asked me if I was Norwegian. And you won't understand it, but if you see my photo, you'll understand.
That's great.
It was really funny. But I see people. The best way to give you this example is this. I stop every 2 hours, 1 hour and a half when I'm riding, stretch, eat something, drink something, right? Restrooms. And I park my bike usually in convenience stores.
Yes.
Gas stations along the road. And I stop, I go inside, do whatever I have to do. When I'm back, it's almost guaranteed. Some senior guy, usually seniors, not young people, who are there admiring the bike and looking all over it. And by now I can almost guess what's in their heads, because it's almost guaranteed. They come to me and say, "Hey, how are you? You came all the way from Florida. That's a hell of a trip. And where are you from?" And then comes this sentence. I always wanted to do something like that.
Yes.
And I know, I see it coming. And it's kind of a hard moment, because I feel sorry for these people I've never met. Mm-hmm. But it's, you can see the... And then they are happy too, because they met someone who is doing it.
Yes.
And it's almost like this is enough. So I like to share my story, and I give them my card so they can see my photos. And some of them write back to me and say, "Thank you so much. You made me travel with you."
That's beautiful.
It's already something.
Yes. That we've experienced that moment with people as well. Not necessarily as many, because this is a little bit more like a bread van. Doesn't necessarily look like we're out having the adventure of a lifetime. But when people do engage and they see what we're doing, you know, we met a gentleman who was in his 80s, and you know, he always planned on doing that when he retired. He said, "But boy, by the time I was retired, I was too tired to do it." You know, and he was like making a point of retired. No, you're just tired. I was done. I was tired. I didn't want to go. I didn't have the strength. My muscles had worn out. I had plenty of money, but no muscles, you know, and I couldn't pull it off. And that's that sort of thing. I mean, I think I shared with you, I also lost my father at a young age, and I see that just potential for the rug to just get pulled out from underneath you at any time, and the need to sort of embrace now in a responsible way. You know, I'm not just throwing caution to the wind, but I'm definitely I'm inspired and encouraged to every day try to get the most out of it and to share it with anyone who's interested in listening.
That's beautiful. You know? Well, and this is, I can relate to these 100%.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what you just said, Andrew, is it's very interesting. You don't have to brag about it. People will come to you, and they will know what you are doing.
Yes.
And I would like to think that the best thing that can happen to me whenever I have these interactions, when I meet people, is to make them dream a little. It's to give them, hey, there is more to life than, "Oh, you are rich." I'm not rich. No. But you don't work. I work. This is work. So people find excuses all the time not to do something.
Right.
And most of the times they are correct. They have ties. They have families. Sure. They have commitments.
Right.
It's not easy. to just say, okay, let me embrace my passions.
Yes. We make no judgment on anyone who's
You cannot.
At that point.
You cannot.
You can't. You can't make any judgment on it. Right?
Because you don't know what other people's lives are.
Right.
Lives are. And the only thing that I know is that the only time I become a little judgmental happens very, it's very rare, is when I know people that they have all the means to do that. Mm. They have no ties and they have no, and still they think the world out there, it's absolutely dangerous. And there I'm a little, okay, look.
Yeah.
That's a little frustrating.
It's a little frustrating.
Yeah.
So many people wanting to do something only a few of us can do. Let's face it, not many people can, right? And again, it's not money, it's not, it's just attitude, mindset,
right?
And a moment in life. Taking away the moments that make up a dull day.
Your father told you that if you're good at something and you do that, someone will pay you to do it. It's something you like, you'll be good at, and that person will pay you.
Some money will come your way.
And that's exactly what's happened to you, both in photography and in the motorcycle riding.
Yes.
You told us about you've been hired and get hired from time to time to be a guide. And have traveled all around the world.
Yes.
Giving motorcycle tours. Where's the most exotic place, or the strangest place you've been?
By far, Mongolia, Siberia and Mongolia. This was something. I was hired to guide a group of Westerners there. But of course, I don't speak Mongolian nor Russian. Never been to Siberia before, never been to Mongolia. So I'm not very indicated to be a tour guide. But then... I was told that I was going to be a tour guide just for the Westerners, guests. We were eight. The Russian, there are going to be two Russian guys. And it was an older Russian, an ex-motocross, USSR motocross champion.
Wow.
60-something. And he was the guy who knew everything in Mongolia, in the northwest part of Mongolia, all desert. His wife, as a cook, in a truck, and his son, 40-something, as a mechanic and the driver, and a younger Russian who could speak English. So this was the group, 12 people, and we spent 15 days riding in the desert in Mongolia, camping. Lots of vodka by the night, fireplace, not a soul around in 100 miles. Mm-hmm. And that was really something.
That's beautiful.
New Zealand is beautiful also, the South Island. Africa is Africa. It's amazing to ride there. South America too. I got lucky because I got these tours. Mm-hmm. But it's not an easy job.
No, it's definitely, you have to deal with problems and make sure everybody makes it there safely. And
you are dealing with people, Andrew.
Yeah, and you're dealing with people.
You are paying a lot of money to have an experience. Mm. And sometimes they go, I don't have cable TV. No, you are not supposed to have cable TV in Mongolia. It happens.
Yeah.
And you have to deal with that frustration.
Yes. But at the same time, you're able to bring your camera.
Yes.
And you're able to capture these amazing images and populate your new website.
Yes.
So tell me, so I guess we're skipping a bunch of time because you did quite a bit between having that car accident and ending up in Miami. Yeah. Uh-huh. Quite a lot has happened to you, but I don't want to make you recount your entire story, but you've for many, many years have done wedding and just ceremony type photography. You've
yes.
done event, like bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs.
Bar mitzvahs, totally by accident. But you want to ask something?
No, please. Well, yeah, I was going to say you went from doing event photography to now you're doing your own art.
Yes.
You're pursuing an art, which I know you're reluctant to call yourself an artist, but I mean, just in the little tiny bit that we've seen from your phone, you're clearly an artist.
Thanks.
We can say it for you without worrying about bragging. But so to go from something that you jumped on the boat again with your passion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like you've jumped from the boat into a dinghy and you're now out in the sea in a dinghy.
That's a good way to put it.
You're going to be scuba diving next. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
I hope not, because scuba diving means I'm going down. I hope I keep afloat.
Well, you're going down into the depths to see even more beauty
no,
and experience.
No. When I'm older, Andrew. Right now, I want to stay afloat.
Stay afloat, yeah. But so
I love scuba. I love going diving, but...
As it relates to this analogy, we'll drop the scuba things. So, but you're on the dinghy at this point, and which I think is really bold that you've, and it sounded like you had a really good gig with the event photography.
Yes.
And you've left that behind. Your kids are grown up. You and your wife have a great relationship. She's happy to come meet you at various points. And you're out here on the sea in the dinghy and on the bike and making art, and that you're using your travel to populate your portfolio of art. Why do you keep jumping onto different boats?
Curiosity first, and I don't believe it's a different boat. It's the same boat.
Mm.
Maybe I'm doing a different approach to it, but the boat is the same. It's to being able to be good at something and make a decent life out of it. It's not about recognition or fame.
Mm-hmm.
Although these days we are living, you need social media. You need a lot of stuff that wasn't there when we were growing up. And it's a little conflicting.
Yes.
You have to expose yourself. You have to do some kind of advertising or quote-unquote bragging.
Sure.
Which it's really not in my spirit, it's not in my attitude.
Yeah.
But you have to say, hey, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. So please go to my website and check it. For 12 years, I was doing event photography. And you were right, I was very well rewarded in all senses. I grew up a lot as a photographer. But when people start booking you 3-4 years in advance, and it's almost like you end up being a victim of your own success, so to say. Because suddenly you have to keep asking all the time, why do you do things in life? I don't ask why I breathe, but I do ask why I like that and more. What attracts me to this situation, right? So at some point I asked myself and I said, look, I'm making a very good, it's more than a decent life. On the other hand, I'm losing my ears. Losing, not losing, but I'm being a bit dramatic, but time is just going away, slipping away from my fingers, and I won't have made a lot of things that I would, and I'm very curious. So it was not a difficult decision once the kids started their own path.
Yeah.
So financially, I'm not in the same situation I was 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Do you say existentially? No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Your existential situation is different?
I would say it's 10 times better.
Really?
No, 10 times is too much. It means that before it wasn't.
Right.
No, it was a good one, but I'm much happier.
Yeah.
Doing this and meeting people like you guys, doing something that I really take my hats off. No, it's a big world and a small world. So you are going out to find it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And see that people are essentially good. That's one of the questions that we have all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are people essentially good or bad?
Yeah.
And if you look at the history of the world, you would say it's very easy to say essentially bad. With all the wars and this and that. And it takes you to go out and meet real people and you say, you know what, people are awesome.
Yeah, well, you were a journalist for many years.
Yes.
So you know that bad makes headlines and bad makes history. Good doesn't make history.
No.
And good doesn't make headlines. So if you're just reading headlines, history looks like a shit pile of just bad news and bad things happening. But throughout every single atrocity, there's been 99% good people to whom it's happening and around whom that we're trying to prevent it from happening.
Exactly.
So we're immersed.
Totally right.
Immersed in good people. We've been very, very fortunate. I mean, like, there are the shitheads that make the bad news happen. That's real. That's totally real. But for the most part, it's a world chock full of kind and loving and good people.
Yeah, but you have to go out there and find it. And when you do, you will find this out firsthand in the next few years on the road. When you find this, life can be almost, what's the word? It's not exciting, but, you know, it can be inebriating. You can
intoxicating.
Intoxicating.
Yes.
Just with kindness of people and the way what they do in life. I met so many people traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in the past 5 years, I've done over 100 and easily over 100,000 miles.
Yeah.
Probably a little more.
Yeah.
And I've met so many people. I've met people 75 years old, totally white hair, very small old ladies riding motorcycles in Alaska by themselves.
Yeah.
I go, what are you doing? May I ask you? Yes, I lost my wife, my husband 15 years ago. My son gave me this little bike. He created a monster because I love doing it.
Yeah.
And what do you do when the bike falls? It happens, right? You are tired, the bike falls. Oh, it's so easy. I just take my helmet. The moment they see my hair, everyone stops. And it's so wonderful.
That is wonderful.
75 years old, and I have friends who are 50 and who are too tired to go on a weekend out.
Yeah. You're a connoisseur of travel. I mean, you've done a lot of travel in your work life, and I imagine in your personal life.
Yeah.
There's something else in the camaraderie of travelers that I've not found anywhere else. I've done, you know, bicycle touring and long trail hiking and lots of car trips. And when you meet other travelers, there's an immediate simpatico, like an embrace that you're just almost waiting for. You can become friends with someone in an instant in a way that I don't know that it's always possible elsewhere.
It's very hard. This kind of camaraderie, it's very hard, rare. And I would believe that the main reason why this happens is because we have a common ground and we share this unspoken happiness or I don't know what's the word. We share this. It's a very good feeling that we are out there doing something. You are not telling me this.
Right.
I'm not telling you that, but I can sense.
And we can share.
Actually, I see this and I can sense.
Right.
Without knowing you, I keep looking at this and imagine how many dreams went here and when you decided to put the little light strip And you were thinking about the little details about the trip.
Yes.
So your life becomes this trip.
Yes.
Becomes this trip. And the same happens with me. And this camaraderie has to be this.
Yes.
The certainty that we share something, even though we are not discussing it.
Right. You know, another place that I've seen that sort of camaraderie happen, just in thinking about what you're saying, is in a disaster situation. We lived in New Orleans, and you know, we heard about Katrina and the terrible flood, and you've been around hurricanes and seen some bad
weather. Katrina passed right above my house before reaching to you.
Yeah. And that we were there for, not for Katrina, but for other smaller hurricane. And it was the way that your neighbors and all the people around you come together in that moment when there's something horrible, you know, something dangerous, or, you know, there's even just mild discomfort that affects everyone. Everyone kind of comes together. So there's like this disaster psychology that's really kind of similar to travel psychology.
Yeah. Although we are talking two completely different things.
Right.
The disaster, it's, you realize there is something bigger than us.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically realize you are mortal, you're...
Yeah. But I think a lot of those same exposures are given to you in travel. Like you see, you know, older folks who are sick and dying, and you meet people who've, you know, are under, how would you put it, not underprivileged, but, you know, people who have very hard lives, and you see all these sorts of things. You can almost picture yourself in that situation. You can picture yourself ill or very poor,
sure, or
whatever it is. And that, I don't know, that something about the travel gives you a lot of the same things, I think, that a disaster can.
That's something that you gave me some food for thought for a few hundred miles.
You've got, you can think about.
Because I have to think about this link between disaster and traveling.
And,
which is not a good link.
It's not the best link. I tend to think about, I mean, that's another thing that happens while you're traveling, particularly alone, I can imagine. Do you listen to music while you're on
the
bike?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, so you can think and have lots of different things going on.
I listen from classical to Allman Brothers to Creedence Clearwater Revival to Pink Floyd to Brazilian music.
Yeah. You got to turn me on to some Brazilian music. I'd like to. Do you still follow
any? Bossa Nova, of course. And we keep on.
Great.
Changing emails, exchanging emails, I will send you some good stuff.
Great.
Well, I listen to music. I write a lot, but these I keep to myself.
Mm.
And maybe one day, who knows, I'll start publishing something.
Yeah. Well, your new big idea book on the psychology of travel and disaster, I really am looking forward to reading sometime in the 2020s.
Once I figure it out, I'll give you a call and say, hey, Andrew, is like, that what you meant?
Yeah, I wrote a book about this guy's bullshit thesis that there's some connection. There is no connection between travel and disaster.
Yeah, I found out.
No, this guy's bullshit. That's great. So you're going to go, when are you heading back to Florida?
I started yesterday.
So this is,
But it will take me about 2 months to go there. I still have to tell you the truth. Today is
Saturday,
August 11th.
11th,
And I'm riding here thinking, I feel like Alaska expelled me this time. I just stayed here 8 days instead of 3 weeks, so because of the rain. And the bad weather. And I'm riding here thinking all the time, should I come back tomorrow? Should I go back and try to spend a few more days? But that's what I was working on. I was looking at the forecast. It's going to be a lot of water in Alaska.
Yeah.
And cold. So I've been there a few times. I don't need to do it. I will start going back home, but it will take me 2 months.
mind talking about your friend that you met here?
Jack.
Jack. Do you mind, like, talking about how you met him and how you've continued that friendship?
Yeah, sure. Jack, when I first came here, that was 2013. In 2012, I started doing some research, right? Some, okay, what do I do? What kind of route? And where do I go? And I found a forum, an internet forum called ADV Rider, Adventure Rider. I didn't know about it. It's a big forum for people on two wheels. And you have maybe 200 or 300,000 members from all over the world. You have separate chapters, so if you want to read about road conditions in Colombia or Nepal, you have some kind of report there.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, it's really great. You just have to go. It's free. You just have to go in, log in, I mean register.
So we could use that.
You can use that. Yeah, of course. ADV Rider. It's very interesting, border crossing. Even though it's for motorcycles, you will find something useful there.
Yeah.
And I'm there looking at the Alaska forum and checking all the posts, not riding. And after a few months, I post something finally. I usually don't post. I like to read, and I don't like to spend time there on a conversation with someone I don't know. It's usually a bad conversation. Someone is trying to prove his point, or so I stay away from it. But I decided to post something, and I said something along the lines of, thank you everyone here. These past few months I was a stalker, I read a lot, and basically I got a lot of good information. My name is Ricardo. I'm planning to leave Florida in June, do my first long trip to Alaska and be back, and so on. And many people replied. But Jack, who is this guy who is, he's close to his 80s now. He has lived in Alaska since 59. So he's a guy who knows a lot about. He used to be a trucker. He works until now as a AC technician, so boilers, so he helps people around where he lives. He doesn't stop. And this guy writes me a private message saying, hey, I'm Jack, I've been living here forever. Welcome, I hope you can make it. And by the way, the questions you have about tires, as long as they are round, black and made of rubber, you are fine. And basically, he said it right there.
Yeah.
Don't worry too much. Don't stress.
Yeah.
Come here and see.
You'll figure it out.
And figure it out. We exchanged a few more messages. He's a really nice guy. And the day I arrived here in 2013, I crossed the border, Beaver Creek. And Tok is 80 miles, right? So I'm there. And he had, you know the spot? Do you know what a spot is? Or an Ingrich? Ingrich.
Ingrich, no.
These are little devices that are very, very...
Like a satellite?
Like a satellite. It keeps sending you pings. So it's a tracker.
Right.
My wife knows where I am.
Yes.
It's peace of mind. It's amazing. And Jack had my route. So I'm in Tok. I arrive in Tok. I take off my helmet. Who is there? Jack. He drove 70 miles just to say, welcome to Alaska. Let's have a halibut burger. And by the way, if you want to go to Prudhoe, go now, because there is a window of 3 days. After that, lots of rain. So I did it. I got to Prudhoe Bay. I had internet signal there. The moment I got there, there is a message from Jack. Well done. I thought you would be there 15 minutes later.
Nice. Wow.
It's people like this, people who you meet during your travels. And I think this is something that I like a lot too about the travels. It completely redefined my notion of friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have lifelong friends. People I know I've known since I was 10. Amazing friends. And I have friends that, it's hard to say, but I would say they are as important in my life now as my old friends, people I just met 3 years ago. And as I'm sure from just this little meeting that we had, we share so much in common. Mm-hmm. If you were around, we would be friends. No matter if I live in Florida, live in California, and we stay 3 years without seeing each other.
Yeah.
It's just that maybe it's becoming rarer, more difficult to find people with similar mindsets or similar... It's not mindset. It's difficult to find people with the same openness
right.
to life. I think that defines it.
Right.
Very easy to get isolated.
Yeah.
And like...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very. And Tiffany, this is something from coming from someone who likes to travel alone.
Yeah, you feel less isolated traveling alone than
Way less, yes. way less. Yes. If I'm traveling with a friend, I feel isolated.
Mm.
Because people look at you and they don't approach you. You are right. self-contained.
You're already in a group.
And right. when you are by yourself, people tend to see you as more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So they tend to open. I can't begin to tell you how many times I was invited to people's houses to, hey, come on, sleep here. My wife won't complain. She love to have you there. Yeah. Be my guest. And,
yeah.
and this is wonderful.
Yeah. A lot of people who are at home and not traveling look forward to having travelers around because you're back on the road for that little time that person's around.
Exactly.
That's why a lot of people start Airbnbs or they have, some sort of camping situation in their yard. We on a bicycle tour, did a lot of, it was called warm showers, where it's made for cyclists, where you can just come stay in their home. Maybe you just sleep in their yard. Maybe you just get a shower. But they have, a network of people who look forward to travelers being in their life,
Yeah, isn't that amazing that you know you have this out there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And most people who are engaged in this, they have to be good people. They have to be interesting people.
Yeah.
People
right.
you would like to connect somehow.
Right. Yeah. Well, cheers to that. I know you're trying to get onto the Dalton Highway in the morning, maybe.
No,
Dempster. In the morning. I can never remember anything. I just drive. I'm just the driver.
Yeah.
But
Tiffany knows the road.
Tiffany knows the road. She's got the map. I just keep my foot on the gas. But I know it's getting late, and we've had you for over an hour now. So
really?
Yeah.
Well,
time flies when you're...
never notice. But, all I can say is thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah,
for...
Thank you. Is there... I mean, you've kind of... You really sort of summed it up early in what you said about following passion and following your love. But is there anything you'd want to say to anyone? Any piece of advice?
Basically, I don't want to sound, I don't know what's the word, but since I summarized this in the beginning, if some people out there feels a little curious about everything we just talked, I guess my only suggestion would be rewind and listen to it again, because that's it. The message is there. go out there and be happy and stay well and stay safe and respect people and try to do good and try to be open about life. Try to not live by prejudice or third-party information. Try to figure out the world by yourself, basically. Is that too much to ask? I don't know.
I think it's great.
Okay.
I think it's great advice.
All
right, and cheers. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, guys, and it was really a pleasure and an honor to have met you. And I have to finish saying I hope in soon you'll be in Ushuaia. or whatever.
Yes.
Wherever.
Yes. Well, if we get a satellite ping to you and you write us back, I thought you would have been there earlier. we'll know that we've done it well. You know.
I won't say that. I would just say I'm so happy that you were there.
So we're surprised you actually made it.
No, that's that. Everything I saw here, I won't be surprised at all. I know you would do it.
Well, safe travels, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and you too.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither while they pass, they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my open mind, possessing and caressing me.
Hi, Tiffany here, saying thank you for listening to the Monkey Tooth podcast. If you haven't already, or it's been a while, check out our website, mtp.dog. There's plenty of information there. An about tab with a little bio on Andrew, myself, and our dog Pele. There's also a van build tab detailing how we did our van conversion. A journal tab, and we, as in Andrew, are doing our best to keep that up to date. And last but not least, a contact tab, where you can leave your thoughts, suggestions, or questions. You can also contact us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram, Monkey Tooth Podcast. If you would like to donate and or subscribe to the cause, you can go to Patreon and GoFundMe at Monkey Tooth Podcast. Patreon is not just a place to subscribe. We post lots of content there as well. We greatly appreciate each and every one of you. Love to all.
Inviting.